if we have such weak international architecture of peace and security in the world, it's a threat for any country faced with the same challenge as Ukraine faces.
More than 1,000 companies have left Russia since the country invaded Ukraine on the 24th of February. The corporate fallout continues amid strong international interest in bringing accountability to Ukraine. In this Global Insight podcast, we examine how both the corporate world and the international justice system can hold perpetrators of war crimes and the crime of aggression to account, and we assess the failures of international systems to provide security to date. First, we speak to Irina Paliashvili, founder of the Washington-based RULG Ukrainian Legal Group. She talks about the corporate response to the war.
We remember that up to these days, some companies that were cooperating with Nazis, they're still paying the moral price for this. And then we remember sanctions against South Africa, for example, because of apartheid. So this kind of reaction to unacceptable behavior has been existing in the international business for a while. But I think these days it's much more codified. It's no longer moral issue or issue of social responsibility. It's also an economic issue and legal issue. So I think the companies know that very well. So for me, it's a no-brainer. And I understand that companies are there to make profits. I'm not saying that, you know, all of a sudden companies should become NGOs. That's not the point. But when you have such a black and white situation and you promote yourself as a conscious company, as a company that respects ESG, I don't think there is any two ways out of it. So that's a very justified exodus that's happening, and it's very surprising that some of them are still staying there.
Alexandra Matvichuk, chair of the board of the Center for Civil Liberties in Kyiv, believes businesses have a crucial role in driving home the severity of what's happening to Russian citizens.
I'm not an economist, but experts from economy, and they told that this gesture from Western companies who withdraw their business from Russia for current moment can have even bigger impact than the sanctions itself, which imposed by government. It's a very symbolical gesture, not only for Ukraine, but for Russian people itself. Because unfortunately, Russians supported Putin. Majority of them won this war. So they have to see the impact to their own lives. They have to be pushed to reflect their behavior, that it's not okay to invade in other countries. And I have to say that there is a tiny minority, our brave human rights colleagues and other activists, who still try to stop this huge military machine. I know that when in future, when Russian regime change, we will try to restore the connection between our countries, their courage will be the bridge for this restoring.
Matvichuk says the war has also posed serious questions about the international security system.
In short term, we need to stop Russia, to stop this war, and withdraw Russian troops from Ukraine and deoccupy all territories. And in order to do it, we need to use all possibilities of current existing international architecture. I mean, UN system, Council of Europe system, OECD system. But now, even now, we need to start a very honest discussion. What is wrong? Why this international organization are so ineffective? Why they couldn't respond properly? If we have such weak international architecture of peace and security in the world, it's a threat for any country which can face with the same challenge as Ukraine face.
Paliashvili agrees there are alarming weaknesses in the international order.
Russia actually invaded Ukraine 8 years ago in 2014. Before then, Russia invaded my native country, Georgia, in 2008. So we have seen a consistent aggressive behavior, you know, violating rule of law, violating international treaties. Since 2014, the war was never too far from our minds. And finally, there was a full-scale invasion. Of course, it was a huge shock, despite of expectations, despite of us already knowing that they invaded before. But this was escalation on an imaginable scale. And at that moment, I think this situation went beyond any other military conflict that happened after the Second World War. And despite all this international law and international institutions that were created specifically to prevent that, we are again in the same situation, which is really extremely shocking, frankly. And unfortunately, the current system proved to be impotent. So we are debating and discussing, you know, what major reforms have to occur, have to be carried out for the system to prevent, really prevent something like this happening again, and to make sure that the international criminals are brought to justice and the victims are compensated. As you remember, the League of Nations disappeared because it deserved to disappear. It didn't stop what was happening, and Germany ignored it. So the same is happening now with the UN. I was trained as an international lawyer. I very much respect and I very much care about international law and about its capability to regulate behavior of this kind, to regulate international terrorism, to regulate this unprovoked aggressions, atrocities, genocide. This is why international law is there, but it needs to be more effective, much more effective. And that's why I think the reform needs to be very serious, very deep. And the current institutions and the current international law is not coping with the situation.
Jennifer Trahan, a clinical professor at New York University's Center for Global Affairs, also believes the veto power of the UN Security Council is in desperate need of reform.
So not only have we had a blatant act of aggression, but we also have a Security Council that is paralyzed because Russia has a veto. So I think this is our first problem, is how the veto has been used. And states have spent about 20 years asking the permanent members not to use their veto in the face of genocide, war crimes, crimes against humanity. And of the permanent members, only the UK and France agree to this. With three of the permanent members not agreeing to this and using their veto flagrantly in the face of mass atrocities and veto threats. So all of the Russian vetoes preventing what the Security Council otherwise would have done in Syria is one example. And, you know, we do have legal tools to challenge this. So states in the General Assembly need to have the courage to ask for an advisory opinion and to challenge this veto use. And that would break some of the paralysis at really the top level of this body that is being paralyzed from being able to do its duty in maintaining international peace and security.
Trahan is also convener at the Global Institute for the Prevention of Aggression. She says the war has demonstrated the complete inability of existing international mechanisms to hold Russia to account for the crime of aggression.
States that are not parties to the International Criminal Court statute are completely carved out of jurisdiction. Something, very ironically, the US insisted on in 2010 in Kampala, Uganda, and got it. And that sentence that the US insisted on is now what prevents the ICC from prosecuting Russian nationals for the crime of aggression. So really the next question is kind of, what can we do at this point? There are two tracks. One is fixing the International Criminal Court's Rome Statute for the future. And this requires a simple amendment to get rid of the offending sentence and create broader jurisdiction, basically. And states are due for a review of aggression jurisdiction in 2025. Well, I don't think we should wait till 2025. But what I think we really need for the crime of aggression, in addition to fixing jurisdiction going forward, and as mentioned, I don't think this is it's just an issue related to Russia. This is a global issue. And that's why I believe a special criminal tribunal on aggression should be created in this instance, but through the UN. That would be the body with the most legitimacy. But the more international, I think the more legitimacy it would be seen to have in the eyes of the international community. This is about world order and the sanctity of all boundaries. Ideally, you don't want to have to create a special tribunal. You would just fix the International Criminal Court's jurisdiction. It's an amendment of one sentence would be easier than building a whole tribunal. I'm not sure I see the political will for this. You know, I mentioned the U.S. narrowed the jurisdiction in 2010, but it was the U.K. and France, ironically, in 2017 that narrowed the ICC's crime of aggression jurisdiction for states' parties. And this is particularly ironic because we have Russia, which is, of course, taken over kind of as a successor of the Soviet Union. And these were the Nuremberg allies that created the Nuremberg Tribunal, the Soviet Union, US, UK, and France. So we have US, UK, France narrowing crime of aggression jurisdiction. This is really the opposite of what we need. And we see it so blatantly now when Russia has invaded. And honestly, we're not just talking about Russia. We really need this fix because if we'd had a more fulsome response to Crimea, we might not be where we are today. Not seeing states leaping to this obvious answer. So then we may be talking, I hope, fixing it for the future and a special tribunal now.